This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
A different kind of threat from ISIS. I am Bruce Johns and in for Gordon Deal along with Jennifer Kashenka on this first weekend of 2016. Happy New Year. Coming up this hour,
it appears Islamic State is ahead of the curve again, this time with state-of-the-art fake passports used to hide operatives planning more terror attacks in Europe or the U.S.
The prospects of reshaping the aging Supreme Court appears to be energizing Republicans more than Democrats in the 2016 presidential campaign.
More companies are hiring first and figuring out jobs for their recruits much later. Some, like Facebook, are making offers to dozens of hires without having a particular job waiting.
And paying off your debt in the new year.
Our most recent survey that we did found that about 1 in 5 Americans who have debt believe that they'll never get out of it. And that can be really paralyzing for people. And it's so important that even if you feel hopeless and paralyzed by your debt, that you take some sort of action to work towards getting out of it.
That is Matt Schultz of CreditCards.com, who will have more in about 10 minutes. Western security officials are said to be struggling to respond to the threat that Islamic State can make authentic-looking Syrian and Iraqi passports. Those passports could be used to hide operatives planning attacks in Europe or the U.S. among refugees. The Wall Street Journal's Matthew Dalton is on top of the story. Matthew, what's going on here?
Well, Islamic State, in the process of conquering territory in Syria and Iraq, has taken over the passport issuing offices that were based in those cities, in particular Raqqa in northern Syria, which is the group's stronghold, Deir ez-Zor, which is in eastern Syria, and then the Iraqi city of Mosul. It now has lots of blank passports, passport making equipment, presumably. So officials are very worried about this, obviously, and the Paris attacks in which a fake Syrian passport was found near one of the people, near one of the bodies of the attackers, is a clear demonstration of why.
So now what for U.S. and Western officials? What do they do to counter something like this?
Well, it's difficult. They've got to try and figure out which blank passports have gone missing and potentially fallen under the control of Islamic State. That's very hard because normally if there were blank passports that had gone missing and each blank passport has is associated with a number, the U.S. would normally try and liaise with the government in question to understand which number of passport books have gone missing. But because the Syrian government doesn't actually control much of the territory in question, and also the U.S. and Syria are not really on speaking terms, shall we say, at this point, that's going to be very difficult. So it's a problem that doesn't have a clear solution.
Has anyone floated the idea of at least temporarily banning all Syrians from entering the U.S.?
You hear people talking about that, and I think my sense is that this is more of a problem for Europe maybe than it is for the U.S. because Europe doesn't have the luxury of doing in-depth background checks of the people it takes from Syria. These are people who are just kind of flowing across the border into Greece, Bulgaria, and they by the thousands, and the authorities don't have the time or the wherewithal to do extensive background checks on these people, or really any background checks. They're just largely relying on the document, the passport in front of them, and a rudimentary kind of fingerprint check, that kind of thing. The U.S., because it's so far away, and because it takes the refugees it selects them from refugee camps in the region, has more of an opportunity to do an in-depth background check about these people. So I think the U.S. is a little bit better place to protect itself from the fact that they're not just relying off the passport the way, to a large degree, Europe is.
We're talking to Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton, who is based in Paris. Matthew, you say also that European governments right now grant asylum to almost all Syrians, and I assume that is problematic for the U.S.
I don't know if it's problematic for the U.S., but it has created this dynamic where lots of people, where the a Syrian passport, real or authentic, is very useful because it means you can get into Europe and stay there. And you're given asylum, whether or not, you know, and if so, if your passport is authentic looking enough, even if you're not Syrian, you can stay. And now the motives for people to do this are largely benign in the sense that they're not, you know, for example, I quote in my story the example of Moroccans who go to Turkey, buy fake Syrian passports, and then come into Europe to because they want to come to Europe, and it's difficult for a Moroccan just to go and stay there. So there are lots of people who just want to go to Europe because they want to be in Europe. They're not terrorists. But the fact that Islamic State appears to have this capability now is worrying.
I guess it's not unreasonable to say that right now it could be impossible to tell which Syrian passports are fake and which are real. Is that right?
The passports that are printed on authentic Syrian passports books that have been taken from government offices during amid the chaos of war, those printed on real, you know, using the actual equipment that the Syrian government previously printed them, the passports on, are, you can't even, as a source said to me, you can't even say they're fake. They're basically real, although they have fraudulent identities on them. So those passports are very difficult to pick out from real ones, I guess you could call them. And Frontex, which is the European Union's border agency, has sent document experts to the Greek islands. These experts really, as the Frontex spokeswoman said to me, when they're printed on real passport books with real Syrian machines, it's very difficult to tell.
Matthew, thank you. Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton. It is now 13 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Gordon is off today. I'm Bruce Johnson filling in. And now that it's the new year, many of us are trying to adhere to the new resolutions we have made for 2016. Things like losing weight, exercising more, being a better person, and paying off debt. Matt Schultz of CreditCards.com is here now to provide some helpful tips in getting our financial house in order. Matt, you mean there will be people carrying debt into the new year as I plant my tongue firmly in my cheek?
There's a whole lot of Americans who are going to have debt carried over into 2016. And our most recent survey that we did found that about 1 in 5 Americans who have debt believe that they'll never get out of it. And that can be really paralyzing for people. And it's so important that even if you feel hopeless and paralyzed by your debt, that you take some sort of action to work towards getting out of it.
Matt, how much of that debt is incurred during the holiday shopping season?
Well, there's definitely a lot of spending that goes on during the holiday season. And in the survey that we saw, most of the people who were going to accrue debt were going to be able to pay it off within 3 months or so. So that's a good sign that people at least are not going but so crazy with holiday debt.
All right. As we get ready for the new year, we have perennial resolutions we put forth. Be a better person. Be on time, eat better, exercise more, and of course, paying off debt is a popular New Year's resolution. And you're here now to give us some advice on how to succeed in that regard. And number one on your list is ask for a lower interest rate. Talk about that.
Yeah, very few people realize just how effective it can be to call their credit card issuer and ask for a lower rate. We did a survey a while back and found that about 2/3 of credit card holders who asked their issuers for a lower APR were successful, but only about a quarter of those who have a credit card have ever asked. And what that basically means is, why not try and ask for a lower interest rate? The worst that can happen is that they say no.
Why do people opt not to ask?
Well, I think that people just don't realize that that the success rate is as high as it is, because I think that a lot of times people see or people kind of think that they don't have any power when it comes to these things, when it's really not the case.
Matt, when we talk about a lower interest rate, what kind of a range are we talking about?
Well, if you are somebody who has a 19-20% APR, you could potentially ask them if you could move down to 15% or something like that. It's really all kind of a negotiation process, because the average APR for a new credit card is right at about 15%. So that might be a good number to kind of start at.
We are chatting with Matt Schultz of CreditCards.com about paying off debt in the new year, and you have a list of tips. We talked about the one asking for a lower interest rate. Next on your list, apply for a balance transfer. What's that all about?
Yeah, these 0% balance transfer credit cards can be a pretty good deal if you play by the rules and you know that you can pay that balance off pretty quickly. And a couple of the good deals that we've seen are the Slate from Chase, which has no interest on balance transfers or new purchases for 15 months and no transfer fee if you do it in the first 60 days. And then another one is the City Diamond Preferred Card, which has zero interest on balance transfers for 21 months, which is a really long time. It's the longest that we've seen, although that does come with a 3% balance transfer fee, which is fairly standard within the industry.
They sound like really good deals, Matt.
Yeah, as long as you can play by the rules and you kind of understand the ground rules, you should be okay, because you know if you can reduce your interest that you're paying from 15, 17, 19% down to zero for a year and a half, can save yourself some real money.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Schultz of CreditCards.com. 25 minutes after the hour on this weekend, our first weekend show of 2016, and wedged between the Republican and Democratic national conventions in July will fall an event of greater long-term significance for the future of our nation, Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy's 80th birthday. Barring unforeseen events, Kennedy will become the third sitting octogenarian on the court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 82, and Antonin Scalia turns 80 in March, and Stephen Breyer is not far behind at 78. USA Today's Richard Wolf has written an article about this topic. Richard, what's the upshot here?
You know, the biggest issue here is simply the age of the justices. We've got one justice who's 82, another who are two others who are turning 80 next year, and a fourth who will turn 80 in a couple of years, all going into a new administration. Nobody is expected to retire, and they're all in fairly good health, especially for their age. So none of them are expected to leave the bench before the next administration, whether it's a Democratic or Republican administration, comes in. That just basically, based on arithmetic and actuarial tables, gives that next administration, particularly if it's an eight-year administration, an excellent chance at remaking the Supreme Court, either via retirements, which would be likely of in cases where a Supreme Court justice agreed ideologically with that new president, but also through untimely or even timely, you might say, deaths, if a Supreme Court justice reaches an age where they simply can't continue, even if they are ideologically opposed to that president. And those are the real sort of earthquakes when they happen, and they don't happen very often, when a president gets to replace, or at least try to replace, vis-a-vis Senate confirmation, a Supreme Court justice of a different ideology.
So there's the potential for as many as four justices to replace. Has anyone had that many to replace in a single or double presidential term?
Well, George H.W. Bush, the last president to only get one term in office, had three fairly elderly justices when he entered, and he got to replace two of them, a reasonable number for a president who only served 4 years. However, one of those two, didn't follow the pattern, or actually, Republicans would say did follow the pattern of Republican president's nominees, and that was David Souter, who lined up with the liberals. So Bush the first did have a few opportunities, but he only served one term. He had a few opportunities meeting aging justices. He only served one term. Since then, we've had three successive two-term presidencies, Clinton, Bush, the George W. Bush and Obama. And so if, you know, say a Hillary Clinton or, you know, whoever, Ben Carson, Jeb Bush, a Donald Trump gets 8 years in office, they're going to have very likely two, maybe more than two, maybe three, maybe four Supreme Court nominations. And this is simply based on, nobody likes to talk about a Supreme Court justice is going to keel over tomorrow, but look at the actuarial tables and you can just assume. That doesn't mean they'll die in office. So often it means, and this was the case back in 1991 with Thurgood Marshall, that they're basically forced to retire due to ill health, even though the president serving in office is someone that they don't agree with. And that's what happened also in Bush the First's administration.
We are talking to USA Today's Supreme Court correspondent Richard Wolff. Richard, so the justices, I presume, when they're thinking about retiring, consider this, correct?
Exactly. Although, well, let me back up. Presumably they do. Retired Justice Stevens, you know, talked about this recently in interviews where he said, yeah, it's reasonable for a justice to look at that. He stayed on the court until age 90 and retired under President Obama. He was on the liberal side of the court, even though, once again, he was appointed by a Republican. He was appointed by Gerald Ford back in the 70s. And so that's an example of someone who stayed on until 90. He was in good health, and you know, there's reason to believe he would have anyway. But he stayed on, continued in through his 80s, through the George W. Bush administration, in order to reach the Obama administration when he considered it safe to retire, right? And he was replaced by Elena Kagan, so liberal for liberal. So justices presumably think this through.
Richard, thanks. That is USA Today's Supreme Court correspondent, Richard Wolff. I'm Bruce Johnson. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend with Gordon Deal.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
It's 34 minutes after the hour. I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in today for Gordon, along with Jennifer Koschinka. Coming up this half hour, more companies are hiring first and figuring out jobs for their recruits much later on, even holding off on salary numbers. What happens when your partner doesn't like your friends? We'll delve into that, and we'll run down the tech toys that will change your life in 2016. You know, you continually hear the word gridlock when it comes to congressional doings or non-doings. Well, Gordon Deal is here now with some insight as to why that happens or doesn't happen.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. He's got a piece about why Congress gets nothing done. Well, it seems like it's been the case for some time now. What'd you write about here, Rick?
Well, we did this in conjunction with the Brookings Institution and one of their senior fellows, Doug Elmendorf, who was director of the Congressional Budget Office for several years and is now going up to be the dean of the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. So he's doing some explanatory videos, and we featured that. And one of them was on, why does Congress get nothing done? He personally has testified in Congress many, many times on just about all of the most contentious issues Congress must deal with. And you know, unfortunately, Congress looks just as dysfunctional up close as it does from a distance, and that's not good news. And, you know, there's basically one basic reason for this. Members of Congress simply are not willing to compromise anymore. I mean, the way when Congress gets things done, you know, we've always had deep divisions in Congress for the most part, and when Congress gets things done, you know, everybody has to give up something in order to get something. And that is just not happening very much anymore. Now, we did see they did recently approve a big budget deal.
Right.
But it was months behind. And, I mean, that's what Congress is supposed to do. You know, they always get stuff done just at the very last second and almost always under extreme pressure. And, I mean, if you talk to people in the business community, this is a real problem because with tax policy, for example, businesses don't know whether they're going to be able to take this, that, and the other tax deduction in the upcoming year, because these things get approved on a year-by-year basis, and there's all this threatening and so on. We're not going to do it this year, but then they end up doing it. I mean, you know, people who run businesses need to plan a year and ahead, sometimes 5 years. I mean, complicated businesses do plan on a five-year cycle. So Congress is doing nobody any favors, and there's not a lot of evidence it's going to get better anytime soon.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman about his story entitled, "This is Why Congress Gets Nothing Done." To me, in part, it seems like it's a lack of motivation, right? I mean, at least for House districts, these things are carved out so that the incumbent practically wins every time.
I think that's a big factor. So that's gerrymandering. That has really been happened aggressively in a lot of states. And the problem with that is that it limits voters' ability to hold their member of Congress accountable by not electing that person during the next cycle. And you're right, it's more important in the House, where they have to run for re-election every 2 years. And the lock, the sort of automatic lock that so many members have on their seats, means they just don't have to really be that answerable to voters, because if it's a heavily Republican district or a heavily Democratic district, well, you know, you may not like your guy, but you're not going to vote somebody in of the other party.
Right.
The big challenge is in these districts is what might happen in primary elections. But when you're an incumbent, basically you get the vast majority of the campaign donations, because you're in a position to pass influential legislation or lobby for regulatory breaks or things like that. So it just seems like the system is rigged more and more in favor of incumbents and against regular voters and people who need the nation's business to get done on time.
Rick Newman of Yahoo Finance, along with our own Gordon Deal. It is now 21 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for Gordon. Happy New Year to all of you listening to our first weekend show of 2016. And as we enter a new year, more companies are hiring first and figuring out jobs for their recruits much later. Amid a fierce market for college recruits, companies like Facebook are making offers to dozens of hires without having a particular job waiting, or even sometimes a starting salary. The Wall Street Journal's Lindsay Gelman joins us now with more on this new strategy. Lindsay, is it correct to say that recruiters are looking at innate abilities of college hires rather than just skills to do a job?
That's exactly right. So the thought here is that employers are looking for candidates who can do a variety of jobs and who are versatile and able to pivot and switch gears and sort of pitch in ways that they might not necessarily foresee when they hire them. And that's because, you know, the pace of business with technology and focus on disruptive innovation dictates that this is the sort of person that a forward-looking company really needs. And so the idea behind this hiring serves a few purposes. One, it allows some flexibility on the part of the employers to sort of grab people sooner and then worry about exactly where they're going to go later. And also serves as a little bit of a litmus test to sort of weed out people who aren't comfortable with any degree of ambiguity or a variety of different possibilities for what they might actually end up doing.
And you report that college career officers are saying more students are getting job offers this way.
Yes. So for a number of years, big companies have had rotational programs where they hire entry-level candidates or junior candidates and bring them on and put them in a variety of different roles, maybe rotating them through marketing and different units in marketing or within sales or something of that sort. So the idea behind hiring someone without a specific job isn't necessarily new, but what is new is, as you mentioned before, this focus on innate talent and sort of attitude and disposition and raw ability, you know, someone who's a strong analytical thinker or a strong problem solver versus someone who is really good at a particular type of software or executing a particular task that can be learned with instruction. So employers seem to be worried less about someone's acquired skills or experience and more about raw potential. You know, are you able to pick things up quickly? Can you think on your feet? And that's become what they're really looking for.
We're chatting now with Lindsay Gelman of the Wall Street Journal about her article, When a Job Offer Comes Without a Job. And in your article, Lindsay, you talk about such companies as Facebook and Intuit now in the business of hiring first and figuring out jobs later.
Yes. So Facebook puts engineers, or some of the engineers that they hire right out of school, into what they call a boot camp. And that allows them to extend offers to people, to snap up talent before competitors move in, have people come on board, and then sort of see where the candidate's interests and skills align with what their needs are. So they go through this boot camp over the course of several weeks, and through that process sort of figure out where someone should be placed. It's a little bit different at Intuit. They bring people aboard, and then that launches, they extend someone an offer, and that launches a series of matchmaking conversations where a recruiter serves as a liaison between the new hire and a variety of hiring managers who try to figure out where this person should belong, and they chat with the person and have a series of conversations which sort of lead them to select, you know, ultimately where this person should go. And that unfolds over the course of several months, and sometimes candidates won't find out till a couple of weeks before their start date, you know, exactly what they'll be doing.
Thanks, Lindsay. Wall Street Journal reporter Lindsay Gelman. It is now 14 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. Gordon is off today. I am Bruce Johnson filling in for him. We often worry about how our family feels about our friends. You know the old saying, you're judged by the friends you keep. But what if your partner doesn't like your pals? Jennifer Kashinka is here to look into that dilemma.
You can't pick your family, but you can pick your friends. And there's nothing like a relationship killer than problem friends. The Wall Street Journal's Elizabeth Bernstein has examined this problem and joins us now to talk about some solutions. First of all, Elizabeth, why is it important to get along with your partner's friends?
Well, research shows that when a couple has friends in common and when they like each other's friends, they're happier. They have better relationship satisfaction. Those friends tend to support the relationship, and no one feels resentful that, oh, you don't like my friends, or I can't stand your friends. So they are very supportive. It's a network.
Is this strictly a men issue or a women's issue? Do women have more problems with men's friends?
No, it's across the board. You know, there's these stereotypes that the men's friends are sort of, you know, loud, you know, oafish bores, or, you know, they want to just come over and hog the couch and watch sports. And then there's the stereotype that the women's friends are gossipy and they also are loud. They just, you know, want to talk about other people. And those, of course, are stereotypes, but it runs both ways. Both women have problems with their husband's friends. Husbands have problems with their wives' friends.
Is it a matter just of jealousy?
Well, it can be very much a matter of jealousy. And surprisingly, it's not so much jealousy, oh, if I'm the wife, I'm worried that my husband's female friend may like him, something might happen. It's more, I'm worried about their friendship. They may go do things. It may be emotional support. They may replace me. Friends of either gender may replace me.
And is it kind of a weird feeling that they might have known you a lot longer than you know your partner?
Exactly. In the beginning of a relationship, you know they've known your partner longer, and you know they know, you feel like maybe they're looking at me. They know the past partners. They're judging me. And also, they have a lot of sway. Good old friends have a lot of sway over somebody. So you know that. Even if you're married, you know the friends have a lot of sway. So, you know, there is this little bit of tension there as well.
You talk about sway. Elizabeth, can friends totally ruin a relationship?
Yes, the friends can, because first of all, remember, there's just one of you and there's probably a bunch of friends. And if they're older friends to your partner, you know, they do have a lot of influence. And so if they don't like you, they can even quietly let their sort of wishes or their thoughts be known. And also, if you don't like them, they're going to be resentful. Now you're really into it and you picked a battle that you're probably not going to win. You want friends to be supportive of you. And also, again, mutual friends are very, very healthy for a relationship.
What should you do if you really dislike your significant other's friends?
So I talked to a whole bunch of therapists and psychologists about this, and they said, you know, the first thing you want to do is really try to focus on finding something good in those people. So even if you can't stand to be around them, try to like appreciate them for something. People have, you know, most people have something good going for them. So try to see, you know, I don't like my husband's best friend, but hey, you know, I can see he's an awesome father, or a great husband, or you know, he's a really supportive friend to my husband. Like try to appreciate them for what they do have that's good. And then hopefully that will carry over and make the stuff that drives you crazy a little less annoying. Also, you don't want to really complain about them. If something's wrong, like I talked to some people who said, hey, you know, it's not that the friends bother me. I don't like the way my spouse's friends treat my spouse. So if that's the case, one woman said, you know, I just see them using my spouse. They only call him when they need something.
Elizabeth Bernstein of the Wall Street Journal with this weekend's Jennifer Koschinka. It is now 6 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend. I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for Gordon Deal. It is 3 minutes in front of the hour on this weekend, and entering 2016, the future feels much closer when you take a look at the devices most likely to make waves in the year ahead. Here are some of the best picks in 16. Virtual reality gets real with the scheduled spring arrival of the long-anticipated Oculus Rift headset, followed by HTC's Vive and Sony PlayStation's VR. Advanced sensors and imaging in dedicated headsets promise immersive experiences that will make you feel like you're in a teleporter. And you'll have safer, smarter drones in the new year. We'll soon think of drones more like cameras than helicopters as their technology evolves to compensate for novice mistakes and foolhardy flyers. One maker, Lilly, plans to release a waterproof model that launches when flung into the air. Well, that'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschinka, I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for Gordon Deal. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening to This Weekend.
We'd love to welcome a new sponsor to the show, All and Sundry, a modern men's shoe company with an old world vision. My friend Nick and his team make the finest handcrafted custom shoes, shoes your grandfather would be proud of. All and Sundry creates a unique experience where you select your style of shoe, whether for work or play. Then you choose the material, add custom features like eye stays, then select a color. They source all the materials and build each one by hand. Without a middleman, you get the savings. No more outrageous markups. If you're a shoe guy, All and Sundry is for you. If you're not, you might change your mind after seeing All and Sundry. Right now, get a 10% discount on a gift card for the holidays. Visit allandsundry.com and enter the promo code DEAL at checkout. That's A-W-L and sundry.com. Then enter DEAL at checkout. All and Sundry, stylish and modern shoes with craftsmanship a grandfather would be proud of. Again, allandsundry.com and enter code DEAL.